This is 98.1 FM, Raglan Community Radio, Irirangi or Whaingaroa. Hello, kia ora, my name is Jason. I teach holistic health and healing, and welcome to Your Health, Your Choice, a show that guides you on your healing journey, helping you choose your own healing path. And today, to help us on that healing path, I have my dear friend Missy. Missy, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
Now, the reason why I want you on the show is you have a beautiful holistic perspective on life, and we've been having a lot of foodie adventures, and you're really creative and inspiring for me to witness. And yeah, I thought it'd be good to share your perspective, and I know there's going to be someone out there who will resonate or will find some truths and golden nuggets that will help them out. What you're doing at the moment is more around being creative with food, and especially vegan food, because you went to Bali and did a, what type of course was it?
I did a vegan chef training level one, so learning how to create these beautiful dishes without using any dairy or animal byproducts, which was a challenge, but it was also amazing to be put into that challenge and to see what can be created with the food, you know, by thinking outside the square and not just jumping into like rip opening a packet and being like, okay, yeah, there's cheese right there. Like making your own cheeses, your own mayos, your own gluten-free breads. And it was a huge eye-opener, and it was an amazing place to be in Ubud, Bali, and Sayuri Healing Foods, if anyone knows that place.
And you're not plant-based like 100%, right?
No, I'm not plant-based.
But you 100%. Love the challenge and the creativity behind making these meals.
Yeah, and I think with plant-based food, I think there's a lot of uncertainty around about if you not eliminate meat out of your diet, but if you cut down on your meat consumption through the week as to what to cook, what to eat, like what to use to eat. And I think some of it comes down to laziness, and some of it comes down to experience and knowledge and just not knowing what you can throw together. For example, I made a spaghetti bolognese the other night. It had no mince in it, and it was made with mushrooms, walnuts, and a protein product, soy protein product. And everyone that ate it, they were like, wow, like that just tastes like mince.
Yeah, it's very close. You couldn't, if you were to ask me, I would have to think really hard to say it was different, but it was so good.
Thank you. I just really enjoy the challenge of creating something that isn't just easy to create. So when you have a meat dish, you've got your meat, so your meat has a flavor already. So you're not really thinking about different flavors that you can put with that meat, because it already has like the fat on it, which gives it flavor, and the meat itself, where if you're using just plant-based, you need to have some season, some spices, but you need to kind of have an idea of what goes well with it. Or you just experiment like I do, or I call it intuitive cooking. So I will just go to the pantry and something will say inside of my head, yep, mix that with that, like curry and cumin. I'm like, okay, all right, let's just do that. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times it comes out pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not plant-based myself, but I love eating all types of foods. Like, you can attest that I love my vegan slices, you know.
You sure do.
And so I don't discriminate, right? And it's not being dogmatic or, you know, just saying this is the way. I love to be open to different flavors and tastes and textures. And especially when it comes with nutrition, what you cook with is, you know, quality ingredients. And you put a lot of love as well. You know, in Korea, they call it hand taste, that other ingredient of love that gets infused with the food.
Yes, I do put a lot of love into it, because cooking is a passion of mine, and it always has been a passion. I would feel happy and grateful to be able to feed people, to make nice dishes and share them with all my friends and family, rather than just make a dish and eat it myself. You know, like the when you can share food and wellness, well-being with people, it's so much better, so much more rewarding. And I feel like, you know, you bring people closer and you can help them with their nutrition and how they're eating, and the healthier, I wouldn't say, like, when I say healthier, I'm not saying just like lettuce leaves and carrot sticks. I'm talking about, you know, not using refined sugars and using different alternatives and that, and having vegetables in your diet and making salads, but also having a balance of protein, and whether that be meat or fish or chicken. I will say one thing though, is like with going and doing the vegan training, I've really become so much more self-aware of where the meat comes from when it's on my plate in front of me. I would be like thinking to myself, if there's a steak on my plate, I would be thinking to myself, well, what did that beast encounter for me to you know, have this steak on my plate, you know, the sacrifice of its life for me to have this steak. And so I send so much gratitude, so much love and appreciation to that dish, like a karakia or a prayer, or just thanking the animal for giving up its life so I could eat a steak. And I feel like if people were a lot more aware of what's on their plate before they just hoe on into it, they would think twice about having meat every day of the week, because, you know, you're sacrificing animals, you're sacrificing something that is a living thing, so you can eat a steak or a fish fillet or a chicken thigh or whatever. So, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't eat meat, I'm just saying show more awareness when you're eating it and be grateful that you actually do have the ability to eat that.
it's a life that's now, it's given up its life for you to continue yours. And, you know, I guess you would call it conscious eating, being conscious of your eating.
Perfect. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Conscious eating, conscious wellness. If people did think a lot more about where that actually came from, then yeah, I really feel like people would think twice about how much meat they consume.
And not just knowing the source, but being conscious and mindful as you're eating it. Like, you know, we talked before about noting the smell, the texture, the taste, and taking your time. You know, there's the saying, drink your food, chew your water. So you chew until it's liquid, and with your water, you know, swirl it a few times so it absorbs better in your body. And not many people are doing that. I mean, I'll admit there'll be sometimes when I'm so hungry, I'll forget. And so I need to slow down. Or if I'm watching something, if, you know, I've got the phone in my hand. Why is the phone in my hand? That's not conscious at all, right? But yeah, if we can all do that, you will actually feel fuller when you're doing this conscious, mindful eating. And you actually won't eat as much. And knowing the source of your food will, yeah, it will make you realize how much of a certain product or how much of a certain food you do want to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like when you are eating, you know, when you have a meal in front of you and you start to eat it, like there's obviously, well, when I say obviously, for me, there's a part that I take time to thank and be grateful for what I have on my plate. And then I'm eating the food and I'm putting my knife and fork down as I eat, as I chew through it. I'm not like still got my knife and fork in my hand and I'm like ready to hoe into the next bit. It's like, okay, I take some food into my mouth and I chew it and I taste texture, feel how it makes me feel. And then I swallow it after many times chewing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I really get present with that initial enjoyment. Well, I guess you can call it like a high. Like there's this enjoyment that comes from eating food, right? We all have that. whether it's crap food or good food, we all have this really nice feeling in our body. Can you be present to that and just really sit with that? Ooh, you know, that yum. Mm. That really, from food, right? We're not talking about drugs or anything here. We're talking about just from eating food. You can get that same rise in the body, that rise of energy. It just feels good.
The spike is like, hey, you know, this has got some beautiful flavors and some amazing texture. I'm going to enjoy and savor every single little piece and every little bite. Yeah, it's funny. You were, I used to work in an abattoir, so a freezing works. Yeah, I used to see the whole process of when the beast would arrive from the farm on the truck, and it would go into the corridor, and it would get stunned, and then it would go down, drop onto the bleed table. They'd slit its throat for halal, and you would see this poor cow pumping its legs and all the blood pumping out of it. And every time I close my eyes, I see that in that meat side of things. And I don't like to eat meat that is farmed and killed like that, because I know that when a beast, or even when the beast is on the farm and the truck arrives, it already knows what's going to happen. It's already got a stress and sense of danger or trauma inside of it. And as soon as it's loaded onto that truck, then all its muscles go tense and it's stressed, and stress, cortisol just runs through their body. And then, you know, they've got that long trip to the meat works, and then, you know, they smell death, they smell blood, and again, it's just this going all through their body, and then they get stunned and killed, and then that's all still staying in the meat, and then you're eating that meat. Again, I have awareness of what meat I eat and when I eat it and how I eat it, and I like to really just eat something that's like a home kill, or something that has been shot in the forest, like a deer, because of my time in that abattoir and the freezing works and seeing what I saw. Yeah, so I just really, I enjoy the farm, the free range, the home kill taste, and it tastes so different. You can really taste the difference. Yeah. And if you haven't tried it, like, go and get some home kill compared to what you get in the supermarket, and just cook them both up and just taste the difference, because one's got cortisol and stress all through its body, the other one didn't even know it was coming and just dead.
Yeah, it reminds me, when I was young, my mum would take us to a farm, a chicken farm, and we'd get farm chicken, you know, and then, you know, we'd be responsible for killing it and cleaning it. But that taste is so different to the chicken today in the shops. It's very different.
There's been a few chicken farms and poultry farms that I've seen as well. So I kind of veer away from chicken just in general. I'm more like, when I do eat meat, it's a red meat or a fish. A little fishy, some protein. But I'm quite happy with a lot of vegetable dishes, and moving into the vegan dishes without any dairy or animal byproducts. And I've made some bloody tasty dishes. Mm-hmm. And people are like, is this not dairy? Has this got no dairy in it? It's not cheese. And I'm like, no, it's not cheese. Oh, okay. All right, it's good, eh? Yeah, it's real good. And I enjoy being creative with those sorts of things.
So is this why you're doing Vegan Vibes?
Oh, yes. So Vegan Vibes is a vegan festival here in Mount Maunganui. It's been happening every year for quite a few years now. And they have like arts and crafts and music, and they have all these vegan vendors. And when I was doing my training in Bali in Ubud and Bali and Sayuri Healing Foods, the vegan chef training, I was making all these beautiful food, all these beautiful dishes. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to randomly message Vegan Vibes and ask them if they've got a space for me, because I'm over here working with Sayuri herself, who is like a world-renowned vegan chef. And I would like to showcase some of her dishes back in New Zealand at Vegan Vibes. And so I emailed Vegan Vibes and sent them a few photos and that. And then they came back to me and they're like, absolutely, would love to have you. And I was like, oh gosh. I was like, oh, okay. All right. And I was just like, oh, I didn't see that happening. I didn't know that was going to happen. I thought, oh yeah, I'll give it a try. But yeah, so then from there, when they came back to me, I was still in Bali and I was thinking out what I was going to do, and the inspiration of Bali and the Balinese people and the food and everything is just so beautiful, so much goodness. And I was like, okay, well, what can I do to showcase what I've been doing but also put my own Missy twist on it? So I thought of a nasi goreng jackfruit pizza. I learned how to make a gluten-free pizza base. While I was over in Bali, I purchased a wood-fired oven, but it was a gas one, so it's a portable gas one. So I'll be taking that to Vegan Vibes and I'll be making these nasi goreng jackfruit pizzas. And I also made these beautiful Life's a Blessing cakes, and they were like a cookie crunch bottom, and then they had peanut butter, coconut cream, slices of raw banana, cacao, and then peanut butter cream, raw banana, cacao, and the cookie top. And I was just like, that's what I want to do. And I want to bring those back to New Zealand too.
Yeah.
Those were my two like ideas to bring back and to do Vegan Vibes with those. And then I've always been like loving turmeric. I've always had a thing for turmeric. And
do they use a lot of that in Bali?
They do. Okay. So the jamu, which is a health tonic, which is a drink, but it's a tonic as well. And they drink that every day. They make it themselves and they drink it every day. And that's got like ginger and cinnamon and turmeric, lemon juice, some other different spices in it, and it aids in the digestion, anti-inflammatory, antifungal, antibacterial, like all these beautiful health and well-being things. And I was like, okay, well, I might do a turmeric latte and blend my own turmeric latte. So that's what I did, and that's when Golden Goodness decided to rise.
So I know you've got an Instagram page for your nice creative culinary arts. What's the name?
So the name of my Instagram page is Bite Me NZ, BiteMeNZ. And I basically created it. I'm not an Insta person. I'm not very good with social media.
It's a good thing, I reckon.
I created it, one, because Vegan Vibes were like, we want to tag you in these things. And, you know, what are we tagging you in? And I'm like, well, you can't really use my personal profile because that's got all sorts of stuff traveling and that on it. Yeah, so I created this Instagram page and I put on it creating what I want when I want. Because that's what I do. Like, you talk to any of my friends and even my flatmates, they've just said to me, they're like, It's like a lab in here, Missy. Like, we walk in the door and you're creating all these different foods and I don't even see you eat them. It's like you create them for everyone else and you give them to everyone else to share and to try. And it's, yeah, it's really good. So I just create whatever I want to create when I want to. But yeah, the Bite Me, so the Bite Me page has got a lot of my creations on it. And that's where Golden Goodness is. And that's where my Life's a Blessing Bites are. So if you want to jump on and have a look at what we're talking about. and also my Nasi Goreng pizza is on there.
You just on that pizza, like how long did it take you to come up with the gluten-free base? Because I know most places, if you go anywhere, it's the same base. It's just a store-bought gluten-free base. It's very rare to find someone that makes their own base because it is quite difficult.
Yeah, yep. Seven times. Seven experiments to make a gluten-free base with all different types of binders and gels and all natural, all gluten-free.
Starches and flours.
Yeah, just trying to get the right combination, trying to get the right consistency, the right texture. Oh, it was crazy. At night, waiting for the yeast to rise so I can, you know, so I can work with these bases and try and create these beautiful gluten-free bases because a lot of my friends are gluten-free. And I did create bases over in Bali that were gluten-free, but they were from a gluten-free mixture that they already had. So it was up to me to kind of pull and balance out these mixtures, and especially with like the gums and the gels that we use to bind things together because we don't have gluten in them. So there's no binder, so you have to create a binder. And I had a few attempts where I made these bases and they were pretty good, but I was like, oh no, nah, just not happy with it. It's not sitting right with me. And then I just kept on going. And I finally got something that I'm happy with. So I'm going to run with that one for Vegan Vibes, but I'm going to pre-cook them a bit. So I'm not dealing with raw dough on the day.
Yeah, exciting. Okay, so how did you get here? How did you get to Bali in that course? What's your journey? Because you've got a diverse background. You know, you've done many different things and you're getting more into the holistic health and wellness sides of life. And yeah, it's been a journey, right?
It absolutely has. And you hear the saying, health is wealth. When people say they want to be wealthy, most of the time it's to do with money. But for me, wealth is health. So my number one thing is that I want to be healthy. I want to be fit, strong, and healthy. And then life will just run a whole lot smoother when you have your health behind you.
Absolutely.
You can have so much money, and then if you get sick, then you can't do anything with the money because you're sick. So but that is the frontliner, health. And my journey, it's actually a very long journey. It started a very long time ago when I was in a relationship that wasn't the best, and I really neglected myself, and I got very skinny and I wasn't eating, and there was lots of things that were coming up for me, lots of trauma, lots of suppressed emotions and experiences that I just kind of pushed down. And I broke up with the partner that I was with, and I decided to go over to Australia, Byron Bay, and do ayahuasca. And I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. I did have an idea, but the information that I was sent to and told to watch these movies on Netflix and all this sort of stuff, and I watched the movies and in one of the movies, the guy dies doing ayahuasca. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, no, I'm still going to do it. And so that was kind of like the first, I guess it was the first shift that happened into that health and wellness, because it was clearing all the old toxins, whether it's trauma or suppressed anger or emotion, out of your body.
Did it get rid of some old beliefs?
Absolutely. Yeah. It got rid of a lot of grief and a lot of sadness and a lot of guilt around just not being able to be there, and also able to let go of things that I hadn't been able to let go of and just surrender. And I think that's the big word, surrender. That ayahuasca journey was mad. It was crazy. And every journey was like so different. I don't know if you want me to go into it or not, but I had three totally different experiences, journeys with the same medicine, of the same batch, with the same shaman, with everything the same, but the intention and the awareness that you put into yourself, into your body, into your mind before you go in for that journey. Even if you don't think about it, you come out of that journey and you're like, oh my gosh, that's what it is, or you know, that's happened. And yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on there. Recap, I broke up with my partner, so I had a lot of sadness, a lot of hurt, a lot of anger, a lot of resentment for him. So my first journey was about self-love and acceptance and being deserving of something better.
Mm.
And letting go of the resentment and the anger and the hurt that he had put towards me. And
was that forgiveness?
Yeah, it was so powerful. And I always say, you know, like, it's more energy to be angry with someone than it is to just forget, send love, and just let them go. And I truly believe that, because I spent so much energy with him and other partners where I could have just let it go. And now I do just let it go. And that was a huge, huge lesson for me there.
And the other two journeys?
The other two. So the second one was around, I had a miscarriage. It was about 4 years before that. And she was a little girl. And she came to me in this journey. And she wanted me to forgive myself. She said to me, I actually saw her. She was standing there in this pink little dress with these red roses on it, this long brown ringletty hair, these big brown eyes, and this beautiful olive skin. And she said to me, she's like, Mummy, don't worry. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel sad. I'm okay. You need to let me go now. And oh my God, the tears just, whoa, waterworks. I was just shaking on the floor and everything was coming over me. And I was like, whoa, this is so intense. But at the time, it was like a part of me that had been stuck in my body for so long just released. And I just like dropped, and I was just like so free. I felt so free because I had been holding all this guilt and sadness, because, you know, like, I thought that I couldn't bring her to term, and it was, you know, it was my fault that I couldn't, and it was my fault that she wasn't there today, you know. So there was a lot around that, and I didn't realize how much was around that until I went into that journey, and she was there. So that was very, very, very hard to go through, but it was very enlightening and cleansing.
It's interesting, where that enlightening, like it lightens.
It does.
Lifts the burden, yeah.
It felt like there was just a weight off me, and that I was able to breathe again and be able to not feel so sad around not being able to bring her to term.
Yeah. And the third journey?
Well, the third one was totally different. So I didn't say about the purging that happened, because the purging with the ayahuasca, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Like if you're still not letting go and you're holding it in, then you're not going to purge, because you're always fighting the Mother Aya. You're always fighting her, and you just need to surrender. And of course, I just surrendered. And on that first one, I was taking the medicine, and then I went back and sat on my little cocoon that I had made. And I was just there, and I was in all this beautiful pinks and yellows and light blue colors, and I was feeling like I was just cuddling myself, and there was lots of self-love and self-acceptance, and I was feeling so great. And then the dark colors started to come over, and I was like, oh, what's happening here? It was like a storm was coming, and the music that was playing started to get really deep and drummy, and it just was all working, and she was working through my body. And I was like, oh, I don't feel very good. Oh, I feel really bad. Like, actually feel really bad in the tummy. And I was like, oh no, I'll be fine, I'll be fine. And she was talking to me, Mama Aya, she was talking to me. She was saying, no, no, you're not going to be fine. You're going to have to go to the toilet. And I was like, oh no. Nah. And I was fighting against her. And she was telling me, no, Missy, you're going to have to go. Like, if you don't go, there's going to be some serious accident. And I was like, oh, okay. And all of a sudden, my tummy just went like in knots, and I would just had to rush to the toilet. And I just had a time on the toilet, which is abnormal. I don't even want to say what happened, but just purged, not through the mouth. So, and I just cleansed myself out of all of it. And then I came back, and she was like, okay, now you can just enjoy the rest of the journey. You've done what you need to do. And that was on the first one. So when I felt like I was okay, the next journey, the shaman was like, okay, so the next one. And I'm like, the next one? Oh no, I don't want that. No way. I don't want to go through that again. I did like really sensitize it. Like it was real graphic, but I didn't want to say that on let everyone know that. But so the next journey, you know, was the grief and forgiveness and all that. So that was a lot different as well. And I didn't purge, but I felt the release and the enlightenment in that. And then the last one was a healing journey. And the shaman said to me, she was like, well, you're going to love this. And I was like, okay, all right, well, okay. And she was going around the room. Like we'd had our medicine, and she was going around the room. She was healing people that were sick in some way. She didn't know how they were sick. She didn't know them. They just turned up, and we were all a group together, and she didn't know us. And the guy that she was working on, he had a brain tumor. And she worked on his head, and she blew tobacco smoke into his head, and then she sucked it out. And as she sucked it out, I looked into her eyes and her eyes were just black. They were like something else was in there. And then she kind of just breathed out this darkness and it was like something out of, what's that movie? And he goes, oh, The Green Mile.
Right.
Yeah. If anyone knows The Green Mile, it was like that. It was like she sucked all the toxins and all the bad crap out of his body and then just blew it away. And just at that point in time, I was like, looked at her and I was thinking to myself, I wonder if she's going to pick up on my endometriosis, because I had endometriosis. Well, I had all the signs and I'd gone to the gynecologist and he said, yes, you got endometriosis, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay. And as soon as I said that, she came over and she put her hand down by my womb and she was like, don't worry, we're going to fix that. And I just burst into tears. Just so much emotion came over me. And she worked her shaman gifts on me and she healed me. So I never had it. From that day, I never had any symptoms of endometriosis again.
That's amazing.
So it was huge. That journey was huge. And going back to the health side of it, then that was the clearing of my body. You know, I'd purged, I'd forgiven, I'd surrendered, and I'd healed. And from there, I came out of that and I was just like, whoa, I need to really look after my body. Like this is part of me and I can't neglect it and I need to look after it. So from there, I started to really like just look into different foods and cooking and ways of cooking. And I'd always enjoyed cooking, but not to the extent of like making my own recipes and giving them to my friends and being like, do you want to try this? And they'd try it and they'd be like, oh my God, miss, this is amazing, you know. And I feel like that intuitive cooking has happened like from the ayahuasca journey. It's like she, Mama Aya, had come to me and said, this is one of your gifts and I want you to use this. Yep. To help other people.
Mm. Yep, you do have a gift. So would that be part of shadow work, doing those sort of journeys?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So shadow work, I've done a lot of that as well. I've done...
shadow being the side of you that you repress and deny.
Yeah, yeah. That where it hides. Mm. You hide in it. You put things in it and you hide them there.
Yeah. Things and parts of you. And
yeah. So the ayahuasca was the first real deep dive into that. I had done a little bit of Reiki massage and Reiki healing from beautiful man here in Papamoa. And I also did some timeline therapy, which... it's when you go back to a time in your life where you felt, when you first felt sadness, or you first felt grief, or you first felt anger, and you go back to that time and you relive that time and you put it right.
Put it right.
By going back into that time and place and experience, I'll give you an example of one from me. Abandonment. And I knew, like, my mum and dad, my family are amazing and they were with me growing up, like they were always around, but they were never present. So being around, my mum's a hairdresser, she had a salon connected to the house. My dad was a stock buyer and he would be in his office. So I could hear them and I could see them, but they were never really present with me. And I had this pet rabbit, Mrs. Buns. She was this white little rabbit with little red eyes. And it was when I was 4 years old. It was a stormy night, and the rabbits got out, and Thumper, who was my brother's rabbit, died in the swimming pool. The other little rabbits ran away. And then my mum and dad said to me, Mrs. Buns ran away. And all I heard was, Mrs. Buns ran away from you. And so from that time, when I was 4 years old, Mrs. Buns ran away from me. So I'm like, well, I'm not worthy of having anyone. And, you know, like, I'm not deserving. And anyone that I love and hold dear is going to run away. And I carried that for so many years through my relationships, and all my relationships, my partners, I was holding on to them so tight that I didn't actually see how toxic they were for me. I just wanted and needed that person because I didn't want them to abandon me like the rabbit did when I was 4 years old.
So that was the story that was living in your shadow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, there's a lady, Deb Griffiths, here in Mount Maunganui. She's amazing. She's a life coach. And one day I was just on Facebook, and she had a complimentary session to go to, and I emailed her, and I already knew her when I was working in recruitment, and she was one of the managers that I used to put temps into. And I was like, hey Debs, how's it going? It's Missy here. And she was like, hey babes, how are you? And I was like, great. And I was like, I wanted to take you up on your free session. And she was like, yeah, no worries. And then we made a time, and I went to see her. And straight away, it was like my mind and my body knew that it wanted to release all this stuff. And it was like, before I even got to the session, I was bringing up all this stuff. It was all coming up in my head.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, what about that? What about that? What about that? And then she was asking me some questions. She was like, how do you see yourself? How is Missy? What is Missy? How does she feel? You know, all these different questions. And I'm like, how do I feel? What am I? Who am I? Like, what do I like? What do I like to do? And then the timeline therapy came in, because she asked me, she said, when was the first time that you felt sad? I said, it wasn't sadness, it was abandonment. And that's where we moved into that whole thing. Like, my parents were there, but they weren't present. And bless them, they're amazing. They've been together 54 years this year, and they've been married 54 years. And like, I take my hat off to them, and they've got such a beautiful relationship. But they only know what they know, and what they've been taught, and what they've learned, and what their lessons have been learned. So I went through a lot of different timeline therapy with Debs, and she was amazing. We pulled through so much stuff. And that was some more shadow work. So the timeline therapy.
So is that like telling yourself a new story, a different story?
Yeah. Mm. So you go back to that time. Like, you retell it. And you retell it how you want it to be, how you want it to be captured inside of yourself, how you want to move forward with it, how you want to really remember it. So, yeah, that was a huge part of the shadow work and that. And then there's the breath work. I connected with another guy. He was in Bali at the time. He's actually in Auckland now, Steve Jones. And I knew I was going to Bali. This was the first time I went to Bali, and I was messaging him, and I said, you know, like, when I'm in Bali, I'd really like to come and see you. He was like, okay, let's make it happen. And we did. And I went and saw him, and I had a 3.5 hour breathwork session with him.
Wow.
And because I thought, oh, it's all gone, you know, the ayahuasca, the timeline therapy, everything, it's all gone, it's all gone, it's all gone. But I'm not an expert on breath work, and I don't pretend to be either. But I know for me, getting into that place of, and he said it was deep down in my chest, in my heart, in my chest. And sometimes you just can't get there with those other therapies and things. And when we did this session, I was rising up off like my chest and my shoulders, and I was like, there was so much that needed to be released that I had still stored down deep. And after that session, I was so exhausted. But, you know, that was what I wanted to do. So every time I'm like, okay, this is what I want to do. Okay, I'm going to go do it. So I hear of something and I'm like, yeah, actually, I do want to do that. I check in with myself and I'm like, do I need this? Or is this just something that I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe, maybe not. Like, is this really aligning with me? Is this going to help me? Am I going to be able to navigate around this? That's a big one. When things like that happen, you have to transition back, right? So navigating around all that, being like, do I want to be exposed? Do I want to be vulnerable? All sorts of stuff comes up. But, you know, breath work was amazing, and I do a little bit of breath work here and there. But interesting, I went to Bali just being, and I went and saw, oh gosh, this is another story. It seems like with me that there is always the synchronicity that happens. So I'll go to meet someone and they won't be available, but they'll lead me to someone else who I'm meant to be, who I'm meant to spend time with or see or do something with. And it was exactly that when I was in Bali and I was in Sidaman, which is a beautiful place. I was doing a meditation, sort of just a meditation day with my beautiful friend Maitreya. And after I'd finished that, I went and took my flute. I just bought a Native American flute and I took it over to Bali. And don't ask me why I bought it. It was just something that said you need to get a Native American flute and you need to start playing it. So I was like, okay. So I did that. So that experience, like after the meditation, I started walking down the road playing my flute. I wanted to play it to the farmers in the rice fields. And then as I was walking, I just get this massive pull of energy to just go left. And this was quite late in the evening. And I was like, what is happening here? But I surrendered to it and I just went where the direction was telling me. And it ended up going to a chakra healer and balancer. And he did this beautiful session on me. He said my chakras were absolutely balanced and there was no problem. But he did say that the breath work stimulates the prana and I have too much energy as it is. And I shouldn't be doing too much of that. So that's where that came from. That's why I was talking about that. So I listened to what he said. So I do a little bit of breath work here and there. He said for me, my exercises and what I should be focusing on is strength holds. So something that is going to, you know, like what did he said, reinvest the energy. I think he used that name, reinvest the energy. So for example, if you're doing a plank and you're holding that until you can't hold it any longer, then you're letting that energy out, but you're still reinvesting it at the same time.
Yeah.
Where breath work, you're like, whoo, whoo, whoo. So you're letting it out and it's going. And he's like, you're just like, but you're creating all this prana at the same time. So that's where that went to.
That's great. I mean, you got to know yourself, right? Like for someone, they might need a lot of breath work.
Yes.
Someone else, they might need to do a lot of, I don't know, weight training or sprints or endurance. Who knows? Like you got to figure that out for yourself. Like what I'm getting from you is a lot of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Right? Being conscious of who you are and why you're here and what you're about and who you were. And all of this changes, right? Like we talked about the other time about purpose. And what is our purpose? What is your purpose in life? Well, what's your purpose now is what I think about. I don't know if you have one single purpose in life, but you have multiple ages in your life, eras, and you grow out of them, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's going to be growing pains with that, but then what's your purpose now compared to what it was before? Will change. It has for me anyway. That's been my experience.
Oh, absolutely. I think when people say, you know, what's your purpose? Or I want to find my purpose. I want to find my purpose. I think if you just want to find your purpose, you'll be looking for a long time, because I don't think there's just one purpose in your life. I think.
Okay, so we will leave it there for now. This will be part one of a two-part conversation with me and the beautiful Missy. Join us next week as we continue talking about growing your intuition and cooking real food and other beautiful things about life. And I will leave you with a bit of Missy's beautiful flute playing. So until next time, stay free, be yourself, know that you are loved, and that you are love. Kia kaha.